Mr. Camera Guy.
Hi.
Such a tiny little seat. Oh, it's flappy.
Kids sit at a camera.
This is a small chair.
In a couple of seconds, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions.
Okay.
And there's no wrong answer. Yeah. Tell me, if you could do anything when you're older, what do you want to do? What's your thing?
I want to be a famous singer.
Well, it's kind of complicated. A famous soccer player.
I want to be an actor.
I really love to act, but I also really would love to teach little kids.
When I grow up, I would like to be a gamer.
A model.
Do you know what being famous is?
Kind of like being like popular at school, but like times a thousand.
I think it's, yeah, fun and sort of in the middle of good and bad.
You get a lot of money.
Yeah, everyone knows you, everyone likes you, everyone wants to be your friend.
You get a bunch of attention, and you get to travel the world and do stuff in other places. Everybody would know you because you don't want to be a lone wolf.
What's bad about it is that you can get very egotistical, I think.
People would try to take photos of you and post them on the internet. And lots of people crowd around you, and sometimes it makes you nervous.
It's kind of hard if you're famous having your own life.
Do you like it when people film you? How does it feel now you're doing it right now?
I'm a little bit nervous and a little bit happy.
Sunlight shines over a pool in a backyard. A brunette in the house grins at the camera as she stands in front of a bathroom mirror.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much are you hating me filming you?
I don't mind.
To be honest.
I think on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like an 8.
Feels like a 9.
I think I just don't like being on camera.
Why?
I think that...
She applies lipstick.
Like, being on camera makes a lot of my body image issues come up. And I'm constantly, like, when I'm on camera, I'm just hyper aware of that. And, yeah, it just makes me a little uncomfortable.
The brunette sits on a couch.
When I was a kid, I was so close with my great-grandparents. They were my world. I just loved them so much. They had these two recliner chairs that they would sit in, and we would watch TV together. I just have this memory of Shirley Temple appearing on their TV. And I thought, I'm going to be the next Shirley Temple. I'm going to be the next child star. If she can do it, I can do it.
Shirley Temple dances on a box TV.
And I did.
Children dance on the stage. A teen girl smiles.
I've been dreaming about this for so long.
Where did you catch them?
Thank you.
Demi Lovato.
Some girl screamed and said my name, and I was like...
Demi gapes as a young woman. Images flash of her on stage at many packed concerts.
Here's about Demi Lovato.
How could you? Sorry. We're gonna need a lot more work. You're not giving up. I'm serious.
An ambulance speeds down a dark road. A young girl lies on a carpet.
I didn't realize that it would have such a negative impact on my mental health. And unfortunately, sometimes that looks explosive, like an incident where you punch your backup dancer on an airplane or you overdose from heroin.
A Super 8 camera rests on a table. A small statuette of Shirley Temple dancing sits near it. The young girl traces her finger over Shirley's hand while she moves through a living room. The girl stops by a zoetrope on a circular table. She spins it and looks through the slots as an animation comes to life. The animation shows Shirley Temple dancing. Lights from the zoetrope flash over the young girl's face as Shirley's shoe falls off. In the animation, a baby crawls to a TV remote. the baby picks up the remote and taps it. Directed by Demi Lovato, Nicola B. Marsh, a title appears, Child Star. Demi rides in the back of an SUV that cruises down a residential street. Trees reflect in the windows. Demi rolls down the window and watches houses pass by.
I really thought I had all the answers. And I thought I had gone through so much that I knew everything. And now I look at other people and I'm like, I know nothing. And the only way I'm going to get the answers is to listen.
Demi sits at a booth in a diner with Kenan Thompson.
When I'm performing in a show and I see an empty seat, like, it really fucks with me. Even on stage, like, I'll see an empty seat and I'm like, ugh, not good enough.
Really?
You know, yeah, it's just like, it's this belief that was instilled in me as a young performer that I looked at my success as my self-worth. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a really hard time differentiating the two. Mm-hmm. And I dealt with a lot of need for external validation. Because I was equating my success to my self-worth. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you ever experienced any of that and what that would have been like for you.
I mean, that's wild to hear, you know what I mean? Because you are so, like, beloved, you know what I mean? Like, you have fanatics, you know what I mean? Like, those people have those things because it's earned, you know what I mean? It's a giant ball of talent, but, like, to see that one inkling of a thing like that can irk a person like that is interesting to, like, you know, discuss because, yeah, I mean, I've had those same kind of experiences where there's a chip in the armor, you know what I mean? And it's like, shit, everything's not perfect or I'm not perfect enough. So you migrate towards those that are going to give you that, you know, validation, whether that, you know, it's good for you or not, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's not a normal existence to have somebody in your family be famous, you know what I mean? And, like, that's just a weird thing that, like, you have to know. You don't have to, but it's good to know what you're signing up for.
Words appear. The dream. A young blonde girl smiles.
When I was 11 months old, I wanted to be an actress.
Can I get you a glass of milk, honey?
Milk? I'm a Barrymore. Get me a drink and make it a double.
The girl smiles rigidly among the adults. She sits on a couch, blankly staring at steam rising from a mug on a coffee table. Demi stands from her couch and walks to Drew Barrymore as she approaches. They hug.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this.
We finally get to do this.
Yes, we finally get to.
We've been talking about it for, what, a year almost? I feel lucky that I'm a part of it.
Oh, my God, of course. How could we not have you a part of this? You were sort of almost born into it, given that you started at 11 months old.
Totally. It was a Gainsburger Puppy Chow commercial.
A baby sits by a dog.
And I've never stopped working since then, except for when I was institutionalized by my mother.
Old footage shows people performing on a stage in a club.
My mom was a waitress at the Troubadour and the Comedy Store, which were coolest of the cool. And then she met my dad, who was so cool. He was lethally deadly cool, toxically cool. And I think she knew she needed to get away from him. Mm-hmm. He was dangerous. He was on a lot of drugs. And then she's just this single mom raising a baby in 1975 with no money. There was a quietness in our apartment, a loneliness. And then when I got to ET, it was like a big bustling environment full of people and life and creativity and theatrics and play. What kid doesn't want to play? I wonder, why did my mom think it was a good idea for me to go into this? Was it because she wanted to be an actress herself? Was it the fact that my dad and his family, the Barrymores, were actors?
I've suddenly become quite important.
I was always studying my family and the old black and white movies. So mm-hmm. Shirley Temple was the child yeah. star of that era.
Yeah. I also looked up to Shirley Temple as a young child performer and was just like, I want to be that someday. I want to be the youngest and the best at what I do.
Hey.
Leah Plunkett, Harvard Law School faculty.
Children have been part of the workforce for an incredibly long time.
500,000 children are working as young as 5, work 14 hours a day for as little as 3 cents an hour.
But in 1938, the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act was the first set of comprehensive federal legislation that had wage, hour, and workplace condition laws for the whole country.
Child labor is abolished.
And children received special protections, except for child actors. The Shirley Temple Act carved out child entertainers from the protections that children got in most other occupations. Congress didn't really seem to think that child entertainers would be as big of a part of the nation's workforce as they went on to be.
Demi sits at a table with her mother, Diana, and her sisters, Dallas and Madison. Jordan, Demi's fiancé, grins beside her.
Look at these.
Oh, my God.
Well, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Did you sing?
Yeah, singing was my talent.
Oh,
my God, I love that picture.
So cute.
I remember one time you made a whole CD of, like, 8 songs. You sang 2 tracks.
Yeah.
And you sold the CDs for $10 each.
I went around in the neighborhood and sold my CD mm-hmm. so that I could raise money to be in the
mixtapes.
Yeah, it was a mixtape.
Hottest mixtape of the year.
But we did things. We bought dresses at Goodwill. I wanted to give them every opportunity I could to let them do what I didn't get to do when I was a kid. And some things we couldn't afford to do at that time. But if we could, we did it.
Do you remember when we would drive to auditions to Austin and we would hold up signs in the back
and would say, honk if...
honk if you're beautiful.
And it's on the back of a script.
And that script is the one where Dallas threw the milkshake out the window.
I know. She didn't realize the window in the back seat was open. So when she threw the milkshake out, it just went right back in.
Yeah. The wind threw it right back
into. We were on our way to an audition. Just we had to wash our hair at a gas station, like in the sink at a gas station.
Yeah. Did you show up with wet hair?
No, I stuck both of them underneath the hand dryer. And I went like this. Here's the thing. It's the ultimate sin to show up at an audition late.
Or with milkshake in your hair.
Let me tell you, I was panicking.
Grainy footage shows a woman driving 2 girls in the back of a car. Dr. Yelda Uhls, developmental psychologist.
It's really hard to be an actor's parent. You have to give up your career. You have to take them to auditions all of the time. You have to be on set. How are you going to work?
Brooks Barnes.
A lot of times we think that it's the parents dragging the kids to Hollywood, and they have ideas about how this child can support the family and everyone can go live on a yacht or something. In many cases, it's the kid who sees this as a way out.
They are born artists, this sense of seeing the world in a different way.
Chris Smith.
The characteristics that some of the kid actors share is that they're quirky.
I'm not perky. That's for damn sure. But I want to be.
So how do you find your lanes in life to work with your quirkiness?
I want to smile and sing and dance.
Oh, darling, do you really mean it?
If acting is your thing, be the best entertainment professional you can be.
Some see this as a way of catapulting the family to stability and becoming happy.
Christina Ricci.
I was really unhappy in my home life and at school, and I was really bored, and I was getting into, like, really crazy trouble at 7.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so as soon as I started going on auditions every day after school with my mother, all of it stopped, all the trouble, everything. But what I really loved was getting to go with my mom on the bus to New York. to the Port Authority. And my mother was kept in a place in my home where she was not present. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she and I got out of the house, she had a personality.
They sit in a coffee shop.
We became very close, and she would teach me about street smarts and getting around Manhattan and all the stuff to avoid getting killed at the Port Authority. And because it was 1987, so it was a really unsafe time to be,
yeah.
Thank you, at the Port Authority. So having that one-on-one attention from my mother was something that was really incredible. I think I also really loved having something finally that I knew I was good at.
Mm-hmm.
And getting all that positive reinforcement all the time,
yeah,
for being good at something.
Christina mimes dying on a stage as Wednesday in the Addams Family.
Bravo! Okay.
What a wonderful job you did in
movie. I had a very chaotic home. My father was a failed cult leader. And so he had all that same sort of, like, really crazy narcissism that goes along with someone wanting to run a cult. Mm-hmm. And he was very physically violent. There was never any peace in my house.
And you found peace on set?
Yeah. I knew nothing totally insane was about to happen.
Right.
You know, nobody was going to, like, get really mad and pretend they were going to drive the car into a wall. For me, there was this refuge of emotional safety.
He's a nice director, that's for sure. And he needs a lot of sleep, that's because he has to work late at night.
That film changed my life. There was something very different about E.T. because of the way Steven Spielberg treated me. I did not have a father, and he was the person who made me feel like all of a sudden I wanted to be my best for her.
Give me your other hand. There we go. That's great for the small of your back, as I was saying.
What I loved was that Steven went out of his way to make E.T. real for me.
He's really real.
The wires.
These aren't wires, those are your feet. Didn't you know that?
He was also the first person I felt embarrassed in front of. If I behaved badly or was caught drinking, there was no authority in my life. So I loved any boundary he set to me. It didn't hit me until I was an adult. Oh, that's how parents are supposed to make you feel.
What is this?
Cheese ball pick-me-ups accompanied by miniature Franks and for dessert, marshmallow kebabs.
My mother at the time did not know anything about making movies. She just really didn't know. And Cher took me under her wing, and she recognized that sometimes you could be on a set and you don't know exactly what is going on behind the scenes. Power struggles or different issues. And if you don't know any better and have no experience, you could think it was your fault.
Right.
And she never wanted me to feel insecure. She was great. I spent all my time with her. I used to hide from tutor school in her trailer, eating C's. She was obsessed with the chocolate C's,
yeah,
lollipops.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the first time I had ever seen sparkling water also. I was like, these rich people, they're bubbling water.
She kind of was like, was she a mentor to you?
Yeah, I was really lucky in that when I first started, I worked with a lot of women that were very strong. They were great talents, but they were also very strong and had boundaries and had rules about how they were treated. And that's one thing I definitely got from her.
That's so nice that you had someone, a strong woman, to look up to,
yeah,
on set, and that looked after you.
And it was my first experience, and she was really in charge.
Yeah. I didn't have that experience. It was a man's world for me. Nobody around me really knew this is what can happen to your kid.
I think anybody lucky enough or is a lucky person to get a mentor, for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, it starts with your parents, yes, but kids don't listen to their parents, you know what I mean? Like, kids will listen to their parents' friend saying the exact same thing that their parents said and actually listen to that person. You know,
right.
It's just one of those dynamics in life. I had, you know, my theater mentor, you know, our drama teacher, Freddie Hendricks, was a big one. You know, a lot of people in the church, I would say, like, the church as a whole growing up. And then, you know, as I got older or, you know, further into the business, like, you know, Brian Robbins is a big mentor of mine, the producer on the show, all that.
I secretly was bummed that I was a Disney kid because I was like, I never got to like...
Yeah, I knew it.
I never got to get slime.
Yeah, no, I was a huge fan of Nickelodeon, like, for that reason. Double Dare was the craziest thing I'd ever seen.
Yes.
I wanted that. Disney was like the most wholesome reality there could ever be created. You
right.
know what I mean? So Nickelodeon was just like, yeah, we're punks or whatever. We listen to hip-hop. We listen to R&B, you know what I mean?
Hello there. Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
Oh, no, no, no food for me there.
Before Nickelodeon, before the 1980s, really, children's entertainment was definitely geared toward children, but there was only the three channels. And there's not really a lot of children, per se.
Even the cartoons were ostensibly adults.
Look at me. I'm calm.
Why shouldn't you be? Your wife isn't having a baby.
The broadcast television model was as broad as possible. And then all of a sudden, there was this new way of piping television into homes, cable.
A person sits and turns on a TV. Various channels appear.
We've got that splintering of the audience. It starts to become compartmentalized to very specific demographics. Well, why not start a channel aimed at kids?
Nickelodeon is narrowly cast at children.
Right.
By the early 80s, everybody's got a TV. Some people have three TVs, four TVs. There's a TV in the kids' room. It's not just downstairs anymore. So Nickelodeon does some of the first ever focus groups for children. It's really the first time where they're sitting down with the kids and saying, what do you want us to show?
The biggest thing that they realize is that kids want to see themselves.
Me?
Great idea, Spongy.
David Camp, author, Sunny Days.
From the 80s onward, there was a big ideological shift, and there were more and more kids on television.
Disney Channel Launch Day, 1983.
The Disney Channel is on the air.
Disney kicks off its own channel. Now there's competition. Nickelodeon, they actually were trying to be very anti-Disney, kind of damn the man, irreverent, dirty and disgusting slime, and as they would tout what children want.
Nickelodeon gives you what you want.
Slime gets dumped on a girl.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Kenan Thompson here on the set of Good Burger, the movie.
I had the Good Burger orange VHS.
The orange
and
tape.
I probably still do in storage.
Yeah, that orange tape is synonymous, I think, with that era. Like,
yes.
Everybody says it. Like, yo, when I was growing up,
the orange tape.
Some people were like, that's the only movie we had.
Aww.
Like, the orange tape. I'm like, I'm glad to bring you joy.
You do remember that it was my idea to put the sauce on Good Burgers in the first place.
That first commercial, when they paid me, it was like $800.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, 12, something like that, 11.
Yeah.
So that might as well have been $1 million. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how much, like, candy...
Yeah.
I was thinking,
of
like,
course.
$800
of
is
going to
buy me.
Yeah, I remember booking Barney and seeing the episodic checks that would come in. And you're
crazy.
Yeah, and it was just like, I don't even know. I can't even spend this in one day on toys.
This one is a triangle that has three sides.
Tell us a little bit about some of your acting that you've done.
My acting that I've done has probably been Barney. That really got me started and, like, with singing, too, because after that, I found a voice teacher.
My paychecks would go back into voice lessons and acting lessons and guitar lessons, and I was kind of like an investment. There was a fire in her that she wanted to get to the next level.
Photos of a teen Demi flash.
Barney was my first audition, and I booked it, and that was great. But then, like, found it really hard to book other jobs. And I was so frustrated. There were a lot of no's. And it's also, like, I feel like when you are young and you start out in the industry and you start making a bunch of money right away, no one ever tells you that it runs out. And all of a sudden, you wake up one day, and you're like, oh, shit, this is, like... I have to keep working if I'm lucky enough to keep working, you know?
Yeah, man. For a long time, it was, you know, a lot of auditioning, like a lot of struggle, mm-hmm. whatever.
A lot of rejection.
Ton of rejection.
Yeah.
Like, and I really considered not wanting to act anymore. Like, if these are the kinds of things I had to go through, it was almost like I was forced to stay humble, if you will. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, when I could have been in my most boisterous, everybody knows my name kind of years, I didn't want that because I didn't want people to know I was struggling. You know what I mean? So it's kind of the beautiful kind of conundrum of, you know, the irony of life, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took it personal every time I got a no, because I was like, there's something wrong with me.
Young Demi holds a mic.
I knew that that was what I wanted to do instead of going to public school with other kids. Like, I never felt normal, so doing performing in arts made me feel more comfortable being myself.
Demi plays piano.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I learned really early on that I could never talk about what I did when I was away when I was back at school. I think the first day I came back from shooting Mermaids, there were two little girls that I'd been friends with, and I went to talk to them and tell them about what I had done, and they very quickly turned on me and thought I was bragging.
Right.
And I was like, oh, and I just realized that it was not going to go over well. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I never spoke about it ever.
Oh, that must have been so isolating.
I guess so. At the time, I didn't, it didn't, at the time, you know, I wasn't doing a lot of self-analysis at that age, obviously.
Yeah.
But I do think that I felt I was not a child that felt like I had a group or I had belonged, you know? And I guess maybe that would have started then.
A photo shows a young, smiling girl's reflection split apart in a multi-paned mirror.
As soon as I started auditioning for roles, the bullying started happening. The popular girls started writing in the bathroom stalls, Demi's a whore, all these nasty things. And then it got to the point where, like, by the end of the day on a Friday, I remember going to lunch and feeling like everyone was staring at me. They had signed a suicide petition saying that I should kill myself. And it was passed around and people signed it.
A girl writes in a notebook.
It was so extremely hurtful.
Young Demi curls up in a bed by a puppy.
And that was a part of my motivation to follow my dreams because I knew it would get me out of Texas. I imagined what it would be like being on Disney Channel. I was like, I'm gonna become so famous, they can't escape my name.
The turning point for our family was when Demi went to the Disney Channel to audition for the Jonas Brothers show. And she wanted it so bad. You know, we had heard so many no's on things. At this point, we had been auditioning for several years. And they flew us out.
Demi records herself on a private jet with a huge grin.
Hi. I screen tested for it and everything.
Wow. You were here 5 minutes ago.
I know, but I've dreamed about this for so long, and I still can't believe that I were here.
I was so excited. I couldn't believe that they were considering me for the role.
The agent called us and said, I'm sorry Demi didn't get it.
I was so close. I had gotten my hopes up so high. Disney said, even though you didn't get this one, we still want to see you for two other roles.
And we got a phone call. Her agent put on a speaker. And they said, congratulations, Demi. You are Camp Rock's Minchie. That was the name of the character.
Demi appears in an opening credit sequence. Going places might be a long shot. Not gonna waste it. This is the big break. And it's calling my name. Yeah. A credit appears over Demi, starring Demi Lovato.
I also booked Sunny with a Chance. So I got both.
When you get a yes that's really that big, that was like, this is going to change my family's whole life.
Mom! Ah, this is so exciting!
You know, it's not every day and I hand my beautiful daughter over to show business.
Bye.
The attorney that was on the phone said, when are you going to be moving out here? And I said, oh, we're not going to be moving out. And they laughed at me, and they were like, no, that's not how this works. We were so
green in this industry. I just had no idea how any of this worked. And you know what? That was the easy part of our lives. I'm not kidding. It got harder from there. Trust me.
Living the dream. A huge sign reading Camp Rock hangs over a large green field bustling with teens. Demi's character watches a blonde girl leave a limo.
Disney comes along and realizes the idea of being famous is a real hook to teenage girls in particular.
The Cheetah Girls in Concert Collection. You can make them sing.
The first is Cheetah Girls, 2003, about a formation of a girl group. And then you have High School Musical and Hannah Montana.
I wrote this song about an 11-year-old girl who wanted to be a rock star.
These shows about performing and what it might be like to be famous.
This could lead to something bigger, like t-shirts, backpacks, lunchboxes.
It's always been a dream of mine to be on a lunchbox.
The big thing that the networks realize is that these shows in particular are very merchandise friendly.
Images from a commercial flash.
Entertainer, performer, JoJo Siwa can do it all. She's fun, she's positive, and she's so sparkly. We're in JoJo heaven, and now your little one can be too.
Demi walks through a warehouse with JoJo Siwa.
You have so much merchandise.
It's crazy.
Oh my God.
You need a bath bomb?
A scented bath bomb?
Bully.
What else do we have? We have...
I mean, art kits. We got toys, electronics, merchandise,
cups,
bows.
Design your own glitter tumbler.
Yep.
You have everything.
I have everything you could ever need for a 7-year-old girl's birthday party.
I'ma come back like a boomerang.
Just updated the JoJo Siwa merch room.
It was always really cool to me. It was weird being produced as an animation almost, you know what I mean? But it was real, it was me, like, not a character.
Right.
But at the same time, same as SpongeBob,
right.
You know what I mean? Same as Mickey Mouse.
Because your name is on this, so it's you.
It's
your likeness. It's
yeah.
not a character that you're mm-hmm. playing, which is totally different than what Hannah Montana and
exactly.
other...
You.
And me.
You, yeah.
Hundreds fill a stadium for a Hannah Montana concert.
Growing up, seeing Hannah Montana on stage with the fans and she was singing Nobody's Perfect, that was like, I wanted to be it.
Miley Cyrus performs on the stage.
If you get a Disney show or a Nickelodeon show, suddenly your life changes overnight. You not only become famous, your image becomes merchandised. You're in Target aisle. They send you to the theme parks to stand on the top of a parade. If you can sing from Disney's music label, as that triple threat benefit can be, oh, wait, you can act and dance. Let's put you in front of cameras.
You're such the triple threat. You dance, you act.
Is singing your number one?
Triple threat star Ariana Grande has followed the super successful footsteps.
I kind of want to be a triple threat.
Everyone at that time wanted to be on Disney Channel. It was the coolest thing to do is to be a Disney Channel star.
Teens appear on a show.
Justin, Carrie,
JST,
Brittany, Ron.
It was the only way that teens were able to make it in the industry at a young age. Because getting a movie role that would break a child actor was so rare. And here came along this massive platform that could easily transform your life.
Demi grins with other teens on a Camp Rock set among crew members.
I had so much fun filming Camp Rock. The whole thing was so exciting. We were all kind of just thrown into this Disney machine.
This is our schoolroom. Yeah. This is where we hang out.
We called it Disney High. You know, we were dating each other and there was people that didn't like each other. We were all the same age and none of us were in high school, so that was our experience of it.
Oh my God.
Photos flash of the teens hanging out together.
I don't think there's been one night where we're not hanging out. It shows how close we've really gotten with each other. Everyone in this movie is friends with each other, and that's hard to find.
Demi and Allison Stoner watch Camp Rock.
Do you remember this?
Oh yeah!
hands it up. Let's stop.
Oh, what was this?
Why do I know this dance still? This is embarrassing. It lives forever in my cellular memory.
Oh, my God. Well, Anne Marie.
Yeah.
Do you ever talk to her?
No.
Yeah. I stalked her.
Okay.
I think she has a baby and, like, is married.
What?
Yeah.
Who out of us have babies?
Giovanni.
Oh, wow.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. Camper today, top-selling music producer tomorrow. Check me out.
Cool.
Do you remember the keyboard scene?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Allison's character dances.
That's like this. It's so good.
Allison's character plays a keyboard.
I play a piano that wasn't plugged in on the day and didn't know what song they were going to add.
Oh, no.
Do you remember? And then when I heard it, when the movie came out, I was like, that's what you chose? I'm supposed to be a talented producer. That's what you're playing?
Characters bop to the music.
And I'm like, wow, she's really good.
That's the moment.
I remember one time you followed me into the bathroom.
Yeah.
In Camp Rock 1.
Yeah.
And I had been purging. And you picked up on it because your spidey senses were already in tune with those behaviors. Mm-hmm. And you followed me in and you talked to me. And I was really grateful that someone didn't just, like, shun me in that moment. Or shame me at all. I felt like you were very understanding. But that was definitely a moment that I remember being like, one, I was like, oh my God, somebody knows. Like, fuck. But two, I was like really grateful that you were there for me.
Yeah, and I felt that support mutually and feeling like we know that what we're dealing with at the surface level is just one part of the story of what we're going through each day. Do you remember doing, like, the photo shoots that we did for, like, the teen magazines?
Yes. Like Popstar and Tiger Beat.
I remember they removed every line and airbrushed under my eyes, almost not recognizing myself, and then immediately going, I didn't know that those things were wrong with me before. And that, like, stuck with me, you know, for all the subsequent photo shoots of, like, oh, I know that in post they're going to fix these five things. You see yourself and you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I look perfect, you know? And then I look in the mirror and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like,
it's definitely caused a lot of self-esteem and self-confidence issues.
Hey guys, it's me, Demi.
And Allison.
Yes, and guess where we are?
London!
Yay, see the flag?
The Camp Rock press junket in Europe was a really, really dark time for me with my eating disorder. And I remember specifically feeling terrified of my appearance and being in very, very, very obsessive behaviors before the press started and knowing we were both going through a lot. And, you know, on the outside, then people are like, that was amazing. Look how great you look. And we're like, you have no idea what's going on right now.
It was a way to take control of the situation.
Yes, and sometimes also understanding that is the only sense of safety and control that you have was just like, I was trained to be at your beck and call, and whatever you want from me, I will provide.
Definitely being easy to work with was the ultimate. You knew you were going to get the next job based on how easy you and your mother were to work with.
Yeah.
And then I was pretty easy too, because I just so desperately wanted to be there. The idea of agency was not something that was even, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't even occur to me, you know, the right to argue or say or disagree and all that stuff was something that, you know, was almost, it was earned.
Older footage shows Drew Barrymore as a child grinning with a bearded man at an event.
I was pretty convinced that the more open and available I was, that makes you better at your job. So the memo I got was, your job requirement is to unzip, metaphorically speaking, and open yourself up to everything.
Right.
I didn't know boundaries.
Could you step back and let us see the dress? We're doing a story on fashion.
Young Drew shows off her dress.
when you turn yourself into a commodity, you're talking about validation, you're talking about feeling less than, you're talking about losing people, gaining people. That's a serious mental game that you need to have intact in order to handle it all.
I think I became aware of it. I started noticing the word brand in conversations, and it just came into my consciousness when I was about 15, whenever I started working on Disney Channel. You know, like, what image am I going to put out there of myself? It's confusing when you start profiting off of your brand, which you confuse with yourself. And like you said, that's an exhausting part of the industry.
Los Angeles reflects in a sliding glass door. Music producer Oak Felder hugs Demi in her home recording studio.
Hey, hey.
Hello. How's it going?
I'm chilling. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Demi stands in front of a mic.
There's all this pressure to create a hit song, and that takes away from the joy of it. Because I'm in the studio second-guessing everything I do and write.
We had it all.
Damn it, that wasn't good enough. Let me give you another.
We had it all.
Fuck. Damn it, why are you beating yourself up?
I didn't like that.
Sip. Let me take a sip.
Ever hold, ever hold, ever holding my head.
Is that it?
Nope, that wasn't it.
Yeah, it could have been it.
But... it's this cycle that feels like it's never ending.
That we were before, I won't forget. I won't forget. About us.
Nice. I think we got it.
One more, just for shits.
Did you regret ever holding my hand? Never forget. Please don't forget.
What was that?
That's pain.
Ever holding my hand? Never again.
Where it changed for me was I sat down with my former management when I was 15. And they said, do you have any songs? And I played them 5 of the songs I'm most proud of. And they didn't react to them the way that I was hoping. They were like, those are okay. Let's get you in the studio with such and such artists and writers. And that, to me, chipped away at that raw connection to music. Obviously, my ego was hurt. It chipped away at my confidence, and I never turned to music the same way again.
The reality.
They've got the looks, personality, and talent to land feature roles on some of TV's hottest shows.
In the 80s, all of a sudden, you start having more and more of these child actors who are becoming stars. Their formative years are completely and totally impacted by their being in show business.
It's fun, it's big bucks.
Yes, big bucks. 4-year-old Cosby Show cutie Raven Simone and her father say that's exactly why she's in this business.
This is fun, but it's also a job. And she does this to get what?
Paid.
Exactly. College and things that she wants, so forth like that.
When did you realize it was work?
I knew it was work immediately. My parents made sure that I understood that this was a job. I get paid for it, and you show up professionally.
At what age do you start to fathom what money is?
When you're told how much you're getting paid for the job that you do. So I knew at 3 how much I was making, and I understood that this was a job. If you lose it, you don't make the money.
Right. When did you realize you were the breadwinner for your family?
We call it a family business.
Right.
Everybody has a job within the family business.
Okay.
So nobody likes to say one person is the breadwinner or not.
Right.
Read through those lines.
Oprah Winfrey picks up Raven.
Booking the Cosby Show, I mean, I can only imagine the excitement within the family dynamic. Cousins, grandmas, and aunties.
Tell me how you got this job.
Cosby Show was the number 1 television show in America, especially with an African-American cast, and so influential within the fabric of society. You know, a young girl from Atlanta, Georgia.
Good luck to you, Raven. It's so nice to have you.
So nice to have you.
Thank you.
I mean, that's the dream of so many Black people at that time. From the age of 16 months, I knew that my job was to entertain other people. I mean, that's a mind thing in itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the youngest Black females to have a show named after them is a lot of pressure.
Yep, that's me.
Sometimes, though, the parents' dreams might bleed into the child's.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so enmeshed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Parents forget that children, young kids, are performing for their parent.
Mm-hmm.
They're performing for their parents' love and affection.
Mm-hmm.
And their good job. And yes, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And money does crazy shit.
Black and White Video plays Jackie Coogan, the kid.
It's 1920, and Jackie arrives in Los Angeles acting very much the role of popular movie star. But he's still a little boy to grown up.
Jackie Coogan was one of the most famous child actors in American history. He made very good money performing alongside Charlie Chaplin, but he actually wasn't able to access the bulk of his own money upon becoming an adult. His parents had frittered away what should have been millions.
In a video, Jackie's character cries and holds his hands out. He sleeps in a chair on a set. The headline reads, Jackie Coogan sues mother for money earned as a child.
So California passed the first Coogan law that required that there be some percentage of money for a child actor set aside in a trust. So in those states where they do exist, Coogan laws are really important for child entertainers.
In Florida, they didn't have the same kind of labor laws or whatever. My mom met this dude, I think, like, somewhere through the community, like either church or just neighborhood shit, like a book club or something, like who claimed to be a good, you know, kind of tax accountant, like will get you out of like your tax problems for like the cheap or whatever. But he was basically a con artist and like ran away with like my entire like biggest earnings up to that point, you know what I mean? So by the time it was discovered, it was towards the end of that Nickelodeon tenure and the end of, you know, the job, you know, existence that I had at that point. And it was devastating because I, like, discovered it in front of others. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was going to buy a house in, you know, in Atlanta, like, my first home kind of shit. And then he didn't show up with the fucking check. You know what I mean? I'm in these, like, real estate people's office, like, waiting to sign his paperwork, and he doesn't bring the check kind of thing. It's crazy going from rags to riches and back to rags. It's a motherfucker.
A boy and a girl in the show do a dance routine in matching hoodies and jeans.
It wasn't until my early 20s, I was touring my original music. One of the dancers I brought with me said the check bounced when I paid them out weekly. And I was like, this is impossible because I've been working since I was 7 and I don't spend any money ever. And I uncovered that people in my surrounding network had been taking money without me knowing for years.
Chris Columbus, director.
I came from a working class family, and I've seen it a couple of times with kids. When see someone who comes from a working class family and suddenly they're thrown into the kid, becomes the breadwinner for the family. Particularly if you're doing a franchise. We went from shooting Home Alone 1, nobody cared. But in the course of a year, Macaulay Culkin became a huge star. And that was unexpected. It's not like Harry Potter, where you know that it may be extraordinarily successful.
Kids rush to grab books.
The new Harry Potter film are looking for children to play the three main roles.
The first Potter film, in terms of casting, it was very intense. I had to put blinders on because that's all I was hearing everywhere. You know, you go on the street, you go into a pub, you go anywhere, and people are saying, who are you going to cast? Who's going to be Harry Potter? Who's going to be Harry Potter? And that, you take that information, and you bring it back to the actor and the actor's parents.
Gentlemen, this is Rupert.
Hi, Rupert.
This is Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And this is Emma.
This is going to get pretty intense.
Daniel, are you going to be a saver?
Probably. I
No, I don't have any idea.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, very. I'm like so totally nervous.
It's your first day. How does it feel?
It feels absolutely fantastic.
I just felt a tremendous responsibility to the actors that they knew what they were getting into.
Yeah, insanely nervous. The amount of people here is crazy.
Really getting the Hollywood superstar treatment out there.
Yeah, it was weird, but really, really cool.
Kids sign for like 5 movies. That's the rest of your life as a child star.
Well, chaps, 6 down, 2 to go.
That's going to be your legacy, and you have to learn how to live with that.
Harry, Hermione, and Ron's actors press their hands on wet concrete at an event.
When I was young, I had some pretty rough experiences with other films that I had done.
We would use a dolly shot.
Yeah, what should I do here?
Okay. Do a dolly shot.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about after this?
Once we wrap, I didn't know what was going on.
A headline reads, Macaulay Culkin's controlling father drives Hollywood crazy.
Suddenly, I realized that parents had to be a big part of it. I can't have him go home to a really sort of shaky environment for the sake of a film. It's not worth it. It was as important to cast the parents as it was to cast the kids. You're supposed to be interviewing me, but I was just curious. Did you have people supporting you who wanted to...
I love my parents to death, but they didn't know how to manage that situation.
Right.
You know, it's a very tricky situation when I'm the breadwinner. And
yeah.
And my parents, there was no manual on what to do.
There was one trip that we took. She was doing a show with Jonas Brothers one night, and we'd had interviews and photo shoots and everything all day, and she was about to go out on stage, and she said, I just need 5 minutes, Mom. I need 5 minutes. I just need to sleep. And I remember trying to wake her up. She couldn't open her eyes, and I started crying. And then she started crying, and here she's about to have to go out on stage. But it was just, for me as a mom, that's when I vowed to say, hey, she's proven herself now. Can we pull back a little bit? And that's all I'm asking. We're not asking not to do our job. We're just saying, you know, can we get her a little more sleep when she gets there? That kind of thing.
I was a teenager, and I was just exhausted. I was being worked into the ground.
Right.
We were all just kind of flapping around, figuring out how to swim.
Yeah.
You know?
It started out me booking Camp Rock, filming Camp Rock, and then going back to L.A., filming a season of my TV show. Actually, no. I filmed Camp Rock. Then I worked on my album. I wrote it, recorded it within about a month. And then I went on tour. After tour, I filmed a season of my TV show, Sunny with a Chance. Then I filmed Princess Protection Program. After Princess Protection Program, I started making another album. Then I toured. Then I filmed Camp Rock 2. I worked on another album, another season of my TV show. It was back to back to back to back. Nobody really knew how to stop the machine. The train just kept moving. Like, there were never any pauses.
I've been touring almost every day since June 1st, which I don't know the day today, but it is like, it's the 5th of September. Could be the 5th of September today. I don't know.
Images flash of a younger Demi at events, concerts, and film shoots.
It burned me out.
A magazine cover shows Demi posing. Crowd swarms around a car driving Demi.
Trying to get me a drink.
A large bus drives down a road.
There was one time where I was in my tour bus, and I looked out the window, and there were fans chasing the bus, and they were screaming, and they were so excited that my bus was showing up to the venue. And I was just crying. Like, I could not stop crying. Like, why am I living my dream and doing what I love and have these opportunities in front of me, but I'm so fucking unhappy? I would always feel so gross about myself. I knew that being on Disney Channel, I was in a coveted position that millions of people would trade me in a heartbeat.
and just I felt like I was taking it for granted. But really, I was just a teenager that was struggling.
Demi waves at a camera as she sits at a desk.
Hi, how's it going? Do you guys have any questions for me? I would love to answer them. What's it like to be living my dream? I am living my dream. I don't think I could be asking to do anything else. I'm like having the best time in my life, and I love it so much. It's incredible.
Camp Rock, I remember a lot more than I do Camp Rock 2.
And there were like entire projects that it's like, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
that film.
Yeah, like, disassociation. It's like a common thread between
all of us.
All of us.
Yeah.
Allison runs to Ellen as a child and dances. She dances in a music video with five women.
Congratulations on the
thank
video.
You.
Best video of the year.
Yes, that was very exciting.
I bet it was exciting.
I know I started dancing around 3 years old, and I just went straight to, like, treating it like work. And so I think I was dissociated kind of throughout the whole journey. On the outside, you look like everything's okay.
Yeah.
And then years later, you can't remember a thing.
A video gets rewound. A massive group of teens practices a dance in a studio. Groups of teens do the dance on the Camp Rock sets.
You've been working.
Yeah.
The first time I was in front of a professional camera, I was 16 months old.
16.
Do I remember it? No. Do I have the picture of it? Yes. I'm like shirtless like this and my hair is big and fluffy, but I do not remember it.
You got the right one, baby.
Do you remember working on the show? No. Okay, wow.
It's disappearing every single day. Back in the day, probably if you would have asked me that when I was 13, my answer was, I remember what the floor looked like. I remember the smells.
Mm-hmm.
But even that is a recall from a recall. Like, nothing is a pure memory right now.
I also want to talk about that a little bit. Like, because I don't... You guest starred on my show, Sunny by the Chance.
Yes, I did.
I've completed my own investigation, and my own conclusion is that you are a wackadoodle-doo. I'm a wackadoodle-who? Dude.
Oh, hey. What? Okay, girls.
When we first got on the phone to talk about this project, you were like, I was like, I watched you on That's So Raven, such an inspiration. You were like, bitch, I was on your show. And I was like, oh my God, she was.
Yeah.
But it was part of my disassociation that I don't even remember so much of my show that I was on.
Yeah.
But I do remember how difficult I was to work with because I was in so much pain and I was hurting.
The nicest person.
Right.
You weren't like, welcome, you know, you weren't doing that. But being the type of person I am, mm-hmm. and that I've been in the industry for as long as you, and I understand the glaze over the eyes, I didn't hold it against you. I just was like, something's going on there.
A younger Demi wears a sparkling silver dress and quickly signs autographs for fans at an event.
It just kind of happened so fast.
Our stars have become true global megastars since the first movie.
It must be overwhelming, and a lot of these kids come from normal backgrounds, and the pressure can be absolutely excruciating to the point that some don't cope all that well.
I felt like more of an equal when I did Camp Rock, because the first one we were all at the Grand.
Okay, the memories are flooding. I do know that we had a bunch of cast dinners at the restaurant.
Then my career exploded, and all of a sudden I was staying at the Four Seasons.
There was definitely a power dynamic and a shift in that. When the second movie came, it felt really validating because I had been leveled up, but I was trading connection for success.
I remember that. Felt so hard to access you in that way. Like we had lost that thread of trust. We had lost that closeness. It didn't seem maybe like you wanted to be reached either at that point. Mm-hmm. And so the last few years of working together felt really challenging. The treatment did feel drastically different. My heart is racing.
Oh, no.
I do remember, you know, a sense of walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely, like, a lot of fear of a blow up.
I'm just trying to get stuff done, but if you guys don't care...
Mitchie, we all care. You gotta lighten up.
Really? And what will that get us?
I know that we both were going through our own stuff, but it still didn't give me an excuse to treat anyone poorly. And so I just want to genuinely, deeply apologize for, like, any stress or any, like, walking on eggshells, any hurt feelings. Like, I'm genuinely so sorry for that. And I look back at that time and I have, like, profound sadness because I'm like, how many people did I treat poorly?
There are such big feelings that I've had since you told me you were doing this. I know that things that have happened along the way, though, certain excess and certain behaviors and certain looking the other way or certain forcing things has led to my own rebellion or downfall. But again, those were all my actions. Those were my reactions. That was my coping mechanisms. I'm very accountable. I don't blame other people.
Well, it's hard to say that you don't blame other people when other people may have been giving you substances as a kid.
Yeah.
Because at that age, at however old, how old were you when you were first given something?
I mean, I used to get high with my mom's friend at like 10.
Right.
You know, and I thought she was so cool, and she would give weed to me and her son.
Wow.
Mm.
I would say it's hard to not blame someone else when you're 10 years old.
I mean, having a 10-year-old daughter now, I it's unfathomable.
Right.
But that's just how I grew up.
As a child, Drew Barrymore lights a Stephen King cigarette. A young woman drinks champagne at an event.
I immediately went right to drugs and alcohol in my teens. I don't remember feeling like there was any other way to be happy.
Right.
And I would imagine, too, if you felt like you had absolutely no control over your life, that's one of the few things you had control over.
I would say, if you're going to work me like an adult, I'm going to party like an adult. I had to be so conscious of everything that I did as a Disney kid. You obviously couldn't cuss or swear in public. You couldn't be seen with red Solo cups because it could insinuate that there's alcohol
in it. I actually remember that, too.
Yeah.
If you had a Solo cup on set, it would be a whole thing.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. And so I never was photographed.
I put my booze in my Diet Coke can.
I put it in a coffee cup.
And I would say to my assistant, can I have a warming Diet Coke, please?
Teen star Demi Lovato's rise to superstardom has taken a detour straight to a treatment center.
I knew I couldn't show that I was drinking, even though I was. Just made me rebel even more.
There was a moment after the incident and you left tour where...
The incident, by the way, just so that everyone is aware, is when I had punched my backup dancer while on tour in South America. I got kicked off the tour, basically. And I'm on my way home and we have a layover in Dallas. And I'm like, when do we land in LA? It turns out that they had set up for me to go to treatment in a suburb in Chicago. It wasn't like a situation where it was like I came to the conclusion that I needed help. It was like, I'm getting punished. This is the end of my career. What did I just do?
Yeah.
And I felt so hopeless.
There were just these intense pressures that were incessant.
I mean, I still think about what's on brand.
Yeah.
That's something that I deal with to this day. That teenage role model and
Those words should never be put together. Teenage role model.
Together, we'll save the planet. One friend at a time.
In a video, over a dozen teen stars hold hands in a row and raise their arms.
There becomes a point where the kids are not just characters that they're playing. They are role models. First starts in the 90s.
Welcome to the Mickey Mouse Club.
It's not just I'm an actor on this show. It becomes I am this character, I am this brand, and it really shoots off into the stratosphere with the idea of the superstar pop idol.
Britney Spears dances in a soda commercial.
That includes buy this stuff or buy what I'm wearing. It becomes unprecedented in a way that you just couldn't do before.
When we think about child stars, really what is going to set them apart is not that they have the best soprano you've ever heard in a child.
Four sizes, 12 inches, 15 inches, 17 inches, and 19 inches.
It's going to be that the adults around them are building an empire that is designed to turn them into really a vehicle for advertising, product placement, and viewership.
Hannah Montana merchandise fills a store shelf.
At its peak, Hannah Montana was generating about $1 billion from many different revenue points, but that is the type of money that not just the channel executives pay attention to. Wall Street analysts ask executives about it on their earnings calls. The board of the company is aware of it, and that's a whole different level of pressure and scrutiny.
Disney, best in breed in the media group. We're going to talk about that, Bill. On deck is Viacom, Time Warner Cable, News Corp, and a lot more.
As the conglomerates grow, they become multinational behemoths. Viacom owns MTV, BET, VH1, Country Music Network, Nickelodeon. The CEO of the company in 2010 told me that there was no more important component than Nickelodeon. It was the cash cow. It was what drove the entire company.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Viacom conference call.
We've seen robust audience engagement with kids. Our strategy is working. We're investing in content with a disciplined approach. We have a lot in the pipeline.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Walt Disney second quarter 2009 earnings conference call.
It would be great if you could comment on how strong you feel like the upcoming content cycle is at the Disney Channel. You've had such a great run, particularly in summer.
Art shows dozens of teen stars dancing, singing, and playing by a pool in a desert. The Crash.
These shows generally run for about 4 years. Tape about 100 episodes. And at the beginning, the child star and their family is extremely grateful, right? All of a sudden, I'm a star. And toward the end, they're starting to think about what my next career move might be. And they want things that the brand might not want.
You all are gonna freak out.
They want to age into a new type of entertainment. That was what Miley Cyrus was doing, right? I'm not a nerdy 13-year-old anymore. I'm becoming an adult. I have other aspirations than being on Disney Channel. That became a 5-alarm fire for Disney. When something like that happens, it's a very big operation. Hundreds of people are trying to keep these properties really on track.
Basically, I signed an umbrella deal for everything, so they owned all my rights to everything except for social media. We were very smart to be able to keep that separate. But if I had like a brand deal, I had to get it approved by Nickelodeon. So that was okay. Always, yeah, but they own everything. When I was 17, it just became something that I didn't want to be a part of at all anymore. Would do anything I could to break away from it, get out of it. Always people would ask me like, are you gay? And I would just be like, I don't really like think I'm anything. It was like 2 a.m. So on FaceTime with my girlfriend, I did a video singing Born This Way. And I was like, I think I want to put this on my real story because it was on my close friends. Just like, okay, do it. boop, that was it. Fell asleep, woke up the next morning and was like, oh my God.
Supportive comments flood in.
I didn't realize, I guess, that like no child star as still a child star has ever come out before. The president of the network called me and was like, what are we gonna tell the kids? I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, what are we gonna tell kids and parents? And I was like, again, like, what do you mean? And he was like, what are we gonna tell them about this? And I was like, that I'm happy, that I like am, what? Like, you want me to tell them that I'm making out with a girl? I'm not gonna tell them that. Yeah. But like, you want me, like, I don't know. And he was like, well, you need to have a call with every retailer and tell them that you're not going crazy. I was like, okay. Like, all right, sick.
Going crazy.
Going crazy. Came out, going crazy. And I did, and I had a call with every retailer, Target, Walmart, JCPenney, Toys R Us, Claire's, Justice, every retailer at the time. And Amazon, had a call with them.
Oh, my God, I can't imagine.
And everything after I came out was, like, changed. The way they communicated with me changed. The way they worked with me changed. The way they developed my work changed. Everything changed. I remember they had the Kids' Choice Awards. And I, for the last 7 years, like, have done everything for the Kids' Choice Awards. Mm-hmm. Performed, hosted, nominated, won, presented, like, done it all. A lot of you have been asking me why I'm not at the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards tonight. And the answer is very simple. I wasn't invited. I'm not sure why. But I just didn't get an invite. I basically got, like, blackballed from the company. They said that it was, like, an accident. And I don't know, I guess I just didn't realize, like, how young I was. Mm-hmm. How scary it was supposed to be. But I think it's the best thing that I could have ever done. I don't think coming out should be a scary thing.
Right.
I wish it was, and I wish there wasn't that stigma around it, but Right. There is.
My parents were like, we knew. I was like, all right, you knew. Okay, for sure.
Right.
But, like, if you pass through the industry mask, you still have to meet the mask that's the gay person that's like, oh, you're not getting past this one to find the real me.
Right.
This is mine to hold. And that one no one saw. Probably, yeah, for a long time. There was a moment in my life when I got asked if I wanted to stop the industry. But it was like second season of That's So Raven. It was like third album. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why would you ask me that question now? Just to make me feel bad to say yes when you know I don't really want to be here right now?
Raven Symone's character grins tightly in a scene. Demi clenches her teeth into a grin in a scene.
I didn't know that you could take time off because no one told me.
At one point, I played 70 shows in 90 days. I was gonna have 2 nights off. And then when push came to shove, they were like, we need those 2 days of rehearsals for the movie.
People are going to milk all of your light out of you because you're young and you have the energy, but you do not.
Right.
You're still a human.
When I look back, when I was working, mm-hmm. I was undiagnosed bipolar. I dealt with depression. Yeah. I dealt with all these things, and I also had an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And was binge drinking on the weekends.
Oh, girl.
And, yeah, I was a mess.
What age? Underage?
This was, yeah, underage.
Damn.
It was the escapism that I was chasing because I couldn't find time off.
Footage flashes of Demi as a young woman.
This is a cry for help. We're going to be doing the Lindsay Lohan walk. We're going to be doing the Paris Hilton walk.
Lovato's troubles bring to mind the problems of another Disney star.
There's actually research there that shows people who experience fame have an average lifespan that's 14 years younger than non-famous people due to the rate of mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. And that a famous person is 4 times more likely to die by suicide. And that fame also has addictive properties similar to substances. So if that's the case, why are we hooking a child to a drug that's fundamentally altering their brain chemistry and future development.
Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney appear as teens in a video.
Screen star Judy Garland cuts her birthday cake at a party given by film chief Louis B. Mayer and attended by Hollywood's youngest set.
A headline reads, Judy Garland takes overdose of pills.
Judy Garland's daughter, Liza Minnelli, had requested that her mother's funeral be held in as dignified a manner as possible. Some of the thousands of people who...
Demi shuts her eyes in front of a microphone in her home studio.
Finding drugs was easy. That was the only way I knew how to escape. But I was dealing with something that was much bigger than what I could see.
Stage lights power on. River Phoenix's character in Stand By Me waves goodbye and vanishes.
Hollywood is mourning one of its brightest young stars, 23-year-old River Phoenix, who collapsed and died outside a Hollywood nightclub early on Sunday morning.
An ambulance drives off into the night.
Lee Thompson Young was found dead.
Pop star Aaron Carter has died at the age of 33.
The troubled performer grew up in the limelight zone.
I was so unhappy and in the muck of it all.
How old is she?
A woman lies motionless.
I get a lot of anxiety when I think of how close I came to not being here at all.
A colossal crowd waves their arms in a stadium. The ceiling of a hospital blurs.
I just tapped out.
A thin bar of light wriggles in darkness. A new path. House lights reflect on Demi's pool at night. Standing in her kitchen, Demi pours liquid from a pitcher into a mug. Demi walks to her dining table and sits with Madison. Madison shows Demi a box of puzzle pieces.
We don't have to start with this one. I did get you some other ones that I think that you will like. Specifically this one.
Oh my god! Well, we have to do this one.
That's what I was thinking. We gotta start with the edges.
They work on the puzzle.
I feel like I didn't see you very much for a few years of my life. And I feel like I didn't see anybody very much except for the people I was working with. But especially when you were on Desperate Housewives and I was doing Sunny with a Chance.
Yeah.
How's that one fit? Oh, I think we're going to need the neck size up. There is no neck size up. They don't make princess dresses for girls over 7. She's only 4.5. Oh. Wow.
Did you ever think, looking back on being on Desperate Housewives, where it was so body shaming, that we had a mom with an eating disorder, I had an eating disorder, and here you were in this position. Like, did that ever occur to you?
I'm kind of realizing it now, but at the time, I don't think any of us truly realized that what was happening with us was an eating disorder. I don't know, it makes me a little sad.
Yeah, it makes me sad too.
That this was something that we were all battling with individually while standing next to each other.
Yeah.
Especially because that was originally the focus of my role on Desperate Housewives and then eventually turned into the focus of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I somehow believed that I was struggling with this completely and entirely on my own.
Yeah, I felt like I was too.
Which was just not the case at all.
Mm-mm. We didn't see much of each other because we both had our own schedules.
Right, and we were constantly missing each other.
Yeah.
Constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I wasn't working, you were working. We didn't really get summers as sisters once we moved to LA.
I would love to make up for lost time, even though it's been so long. Look at that.
We did it. So that's how big the puzzle is, in case you were wondering.
I'm so proud of us.
How do you understand what is real and important and going to feed you and nourish you, and what is the candy?
I now am kind of reprogramming my brain.
Yep.
Trying to change things that I learned as a child star.
100%. It's deprogramming, reprogramming.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not overstepping, but you looked at that overdose and said, I will not go down this way. I won't go down at all. I'm going to actually rise.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come out of this triumphant. I can't believe how much I respect life, knowing that I disrespected it so many times. I think there was plenty of my life where I was a human walking cautionary tale. I have done shit no one knows I did that is so crazy that somehow nobody found out about. And it's because we all had more anonymity before social media, especially before cell phones. Oh, right. My God.
Right.
That's just the world we live in. And a whole new trade.
Right.
A whole new world of a job opportunity that's been created. And then that goes in with, like, likes or followers. How valuable one is.
When I was really young, I was 13, I got addicted to numbers. And so I would see my YouTube channel, and I would see how many views I got, and I would see how much money it made, 6 digits a month, easily. And I would see how many subscribers it gained, and then I wanted to beat it, and then I wanted to beat it, and then I wouldn't beat it, and I would go crazy.
Okay.
Do you do Snapchat?
I don't.
Do you know how many people would die to see you getting ready in the morning?
Yeah.
You eating lunch. Like, you know what I mean? I do it on a very extreme level. I post 250 to 300 things a day on there. Uh-huh. It's nuts.
It's so much work,
and my whole day is filmed.
Give me your take on this.
Everything I eat is filmed. Every song I sing in the car is filmed. Everything I do gets picked apart. Everything I do gets talked about. There's nothing left for me at the end of the day.
Teens sit on the stage in a small theater. They turn to Demi as she walks in and sits with Chris Smith, director of the Looking Ahead program.
You guys.
It's great to meet you.
First of all, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to see you. So, Demi, I'm curious. When you first heard that there were going to be a bunch of kids here and you were going to be talking to these kids, what went through your head?
Oh, just joy. I wish that I had been able to ask questions to somebody in the industry when I was first starting out. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Mm. And I didn't have a mentor. There wasn't any guidance. And there definitely is not a manual on how to navigate this industry at such a young age.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you want to make a great film, TV show, or commercial. But what matters is your well-being and the other things in your life, like family and friends. Mm. That's what really matters.
Yeah.
Today, being in the public eye, social media is so common. No matter what you do, it's like seen right away, and everyone has something to say about it. When you were going through it at such a young age, how did you feel about it, and how did you deal with it?
I can't imagine growing up with TikTok at your age. There's so much pressure to make things go viral and to look a certain way. It's really tough.
Young girls and boys sit in front of the camera.
Can you tell me what your favorite thing is to watch on TV?
YouTube.
Do you watch TV?
I just watch YouTube.
I watch YouTube and I make TikTok videos for my friends, like the dances that people do. Sometimes I do that on TikTok.
My favorite thing to watch is YouTube.
Charlie D'Amelio. Mr. Beast.
YouTube. Minecraft videos.
I like watching like them showing me what they got at Sephora, or like showing their morning routine or night routine.
Can I say somebody who's a kid?
Yes, I'm better if they're a kid.
Ryan.
He has his own show, his own video game, and his own toys.
I don't know if he's really that famous or companies just like making toys and video games about him.
Still, that's pretty famous.
That's him, Ryan of Ryan's World.
Ryan is like the Elvis for anyone under the age of 10. He blew up on YouTube by playing with toys. He's been on the internet since he was 3.
Okay, let's go.
He makes tens of millions of dollars with his licensing deals. He's now one of the top paid YouTubers on the entire planet.
Okay, Ryan, on a scale of 1 through 5, what do you think about the Hot Wheels, Color Shifters, Color Splash, Science Lab? Five!
This is a massive multi-billion dollar industry. There's over 50 million content creators worldwide. According to Goldman Sachs, the content creator industry is set to be worth $500 billion in the next 2 years. It dwarfs the traditional entertainment industry.
Bye!
Kids are making so much money in an unregulated space.
And yeah, it worries me because there's no Coogan law for it. You know, like, we had protections put in place when I was a child actor that said a percentage of my money is going to be returned to me or given to me at 18. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I had, like, a system in place that guaranteed me to have some sort of financial gain when I was of legal age. And to hear that these kids are making tens of millions of dollars and there's no Coogan account for that, it just scares me because I'm like, who's controlling that money and where is it going?
This is an entirely new industry that's developed really in the past decade. The real money has only come in the past 5 to 7 years. And there are absolutely zero safeguards or legal protections for children working in this industry.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Demi.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well, thank you.
So nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you, too.
Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with this legislation.
I was doing this research about family influencers, and then I was seeing that a lot of parents are monetizing their children online. And it doesn't seem like the children are able to opt out of this. It is a lot harder when your parents are your bosses and the set is your house.
It feels like maybe a child doesn't know when to turn it off.
Right.
Because they have to be on all the time, and that can be really damaging.
Right. I have an idea for a new policy concept, and I went to Washington State Legislature.
Hello, Representative Reeves.
A lot of cold calling, cold emailing. I had a phone script, I had an email script. Eventually connected with Representative Christine Reeves.
I wanted to talk to you about this bill that you're passing, and what was it that made you want to get involved?
When I got into politics, my kids were 2 and 4, and I was walking down the hall in my house, and I hear my daughter giggling into the mirror going, like and subscribe, and I just thought, what on earth? Where did she hear that?
Right.
Here my 7-year-old daughter's got my makeup brushes out doing a makeup tutorial in the bathroom mirror, and I think it just clicked very quickly for me. The internet is kind of this unregulated kind of wild, wild west. And if not us, if not parents who are paying attention to this, who's going to take care of it?
When I was a child actor, I had a Coogan account, which puts money into a reserve so that you can get it whenever you turn 18.
Well, and that's what this bill does, right? It proposes that we would create accounts from folks who are basically monetizing their children on social media to ensure that those kids have the opportunity to have some compensation. The bill also focuses on ensuring that the kids have the opportunity to go to these platforms and to request that their likeness be taken down to be able to kind of take that power back.
You know, there have to be children out there who want to make YouTube videos just for fun.
Yeah. My daughter, apparently.
your daughter.
In the bathroom.
And so it's not about stopping kids that want to be online. It's just about protecting them.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Really fun.
You're amazing.
Oh, well, it's Chris is actually who's amazing. Like, they did a lot of the homework and the research to, like, make this all kind of come to fruition. And so getting the opportunity to have somebody so young just believe in government the way that I do, that, you know, because I fundamentally believe government can be a force for good.
House Bill 1627 is a bill to protect kids who are monetized on family social media accounts.
Taking steps to safeguard a child influencer's earnings and privacy is a crucial step in minimizing the harm that hundreds of thousands of children have already experienced across traditional and digital media. Myself being one of them.
First of its kind law takes effect in Illinois.
SB 764 applies the Coogan Act to modern performers.
Measure passes.
Demi's car parks at the CBS Broadcast Center building.
I can't put my fame away. Like, I can't just say I don't want to be famous. And that can be a little isolating. But I got a second chance at life. And because of that, I appreciate every day that I have. You know, I feel like I have a little bit more permission to celebrate the wins.
A sign reads, The Drew Barrymore Show.
All right, hello, everybody.
A man applies makeup to Demi. Drew approaches Demi and hugs her.
Congratulations on this successful show.
I mean,
you know the road better than most of, like, how, I'm like, how did we even get here? Are we going to be able to stay here? We always think it's quite a moment's notice. Do you still have that, like?
Yes, of course.
Okay, good.
Oh, good. That makes me feel so not alone.
No.
And it's like, I'm like, be present. Don't be afraid of it disappearing.
Yeah.
Drew holds Demi's hand as she walks her out of the backstage area and onto the show's set. Dozens in audience seating stand and grin. Children and teens sit in front of the camera.
Do you think stories help you understand yourself?
Yeah. It's fun to write and draw and do all those stuff. I've actually made a story about me before.
I feel like if I don't, like, use my imagination and express myself, it kind of just is like... Like, I don't really know if there's, like, a word for it, but, like, when you feel like you're not really, like, living, I guess.
What is the hardest thing about being a kid?
Probably when, like, you feel misunderstood. Like, when nobody knows what you're talking about but you. I feel that way a lot.
And so, what do you do?
Sometimes I write down a song in my notebook.
There's always been an intensity that I've felt since I was a child. And just never wanted to have a diary because you never know who's going to find it one day. I always turned to music as a safe way for me to feel my emotions. And it saved me a lot of times.
A teen Demi plays a piano on a stage. Demi walks through her home recording studio and enters the recording booth. She stands in front of the microphone. Demi collects herself, then puts on headphones. She grins and leans to the microphone.
Okay.
She waves her hands.
I'm back.
Oak monitors her recording from a computer outside the booth.
Building that connection to music again is the most important thing I can do for myself as an artist.
Demi sits at a table by Oak's computer with several others.
It's all gonna happen, but not how you think.
So it's just like lifting that melody a little bit.
I think the second pre-chorus you should extend until it's full length.
Okay, cool.
Like
yeah, we'll write two
first
of those.
Pre,
love.
But it'd be nice to go what you'd like.
Keep hoping.
That's beautiful. I love that.
You'll be okay.
I love it.
You'll be okay.
Wild eyes, wild heart, rolling out.
Blowing
out candles,
wishing on stars.
Let me grab that real quick.
One day,
yeah, I like
that
you're doing that.
Oh, that sounds like a
Disney song. It's all gonna happen, but not how you think.
If you had to do everything from the very start all over again, is it worth it?
I try to live by the philosophy of never having regrets. Mm-hmm. And I've made some really questionable choices in my life. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't end up where I am in this moment right now today had I not made all the choices that I made in my life leading up to this point.
Oh, there we go.
Wait, do one more.
Okay. Iconic pose.
Wait, what's my iconic
the
pose?
The knees.
Okay, okay, ready?
Oh, we're doing the knees.
All right.
Yes.
Awesome.
Chris takes a photo of Demi posing with the teens on the small stage. They all mime holding microphones to their mouths. Demi stands on the stage in a stadium filled with people. They wave their phone lights and make the darkness of the venue glitter.
Can't stop, you don't want to. Here's what I wish I knew.
When I do throw that flare out into the sky, that flare attracts others. It's that connection where they understand and know where I was coming from.
Here's to growth, to the amazing memories that we've made this year. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6,
Jordan walks across the stage to Demi. They hold each other and kiss deeply. Two people in the audience kiss. Girls gawk and grin as they hop up and down and pat their chests. A girl presses her hands together and cries. A man wipes away tears. A young man holds another young man from behind and kisses his cheek.
You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay.
Demi steps out of her recording booth. Credits appear.
Slow down, deep breath. Don't let the monster scare you to death. They'll try to tear you apart, but know that you're perfect the way that you are. I know you can't see it now, but someday it all works out. The sharks in the water will teach you to swim. The thorns on the roses will thicken your skin. People might hurt you and break promises, but darling, I promise you this. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay, kid. You'll make it like I did. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay, kid. You'll be okay.
Copyright 2024 Libolt Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Audio description by Point360. Narrated by Kat Nguyen. Logos, Aub Pictures, an Aub Media Company. DLG Productions. SB Projects. Hulu Originals.